So it's Saturday night, November 30th, and it's also Wampra. So we like to refer to this as a double header, both the Saturday and the Wampra, which just means we're not doing this twice this week. And seems like it was a while ago, but I think it was just yesterday that Lumpur left. It's interesting how, just reflecting upon how something can build up in one's mind, oh, what's this going to be like? Lumpur's leaving, and then also, currently Ajahn Janaka is not here. So for me personally, it's like, oh, pressure's on. but really, it's not that unusual. I mean, these kind of things have happened before, and it's just sort of another problem in the mind. And it's interesting to just think about that. These kind of dreads that I can kind of think about are, there's more talks to give. And Ajahn Amaro would talk about how, how did you become a senior monk? And he was like, well, just eventually you look to the right and there's no one to the right of you. and that's just how it happens. But luckily in 12 days or 13 days, Ajahn Janaka will be coming back, so I'm very happy for that. He's currently halfway through his trip in Bhutan. But it does have an impact when we are relying on elders and those who have experience on the path, and when they part from us, it has an impact that we can think about and, kind of conjure up like what that will mean for us. But there's also a palpable feeling like, okay, Lumpur is absent. I noticed that when we were chanting. Lumpur has a very strong resonant chanting voice, and whenever he's here, he's just, that's what I often hear. But yet again, this is just an opportunity. It's an opportunity to see what do you do? Are you okay? Figure out how to chant without Lumpur, and then harmonize and figure things out. And so, there's a title of a book that Ajahn Suchito has, and I think he's. Monks, as they continue in their practice for many years, they develop propensities around something they might be interested in. So he was interested in Qigong, and then that naturally led to, I think, an interest in standing meditation. So one of his book titles is about, it's all about standing meditation, and he's very good with words, and he aptly named it On Your Own Two Feet, I believe. And that's kind of how I reflect around, what happens when we are relying on a physical form of a human being who manifests wisdom for us, and then they're there, we can rely on them, and then they're gone. And of course, this is just a warm up for when Lumpur passes away. And we have a choice. We can kind of lament, and I was thinking about how I think it was, I read the biography of Lumpur Mun when I was in Anagarika and Samanera. I think it took me like 2 years to get through. It was a hard slog, but still very inspiring. And I can't remember if Lungtar Mahabua was talking about his own experience or how he saw other monks when Lumpur Mun died, but I think I remember he said there was like some wailing and being very upset. And I'm not sure, I thought I remembered him having that similar experience. But he also might have had a more stoic experience, as he is. He can be very stoic. And then also just relating how this happened in the Buddha's time, with the Buddha's passing, and also when Sariputta died, the Buddha gave a very light chastising to Ananda, who was very sad, expressing his kind of sadness. Sariputta passed on, and the Buddha's one of the two chief disciples of the Buddha. And Sariputta particularly meant something very dear to Ananda. He had a very close relationship with him and relied on him. And the Buddha reminded him, like, well, what, you know, this is what we've been kind of talking about for a long time, you know, this sense that all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. And in fact, you know, when we frame it in an understanding of that, and we can take that in a very deep way, it doesn't mean that there's not sadness, but maybe there's not a wailing or kind of, you know, as when Lumpur actually got in the car and closed the door and his window was open and everybody was kneeling with their hands in Anjali, and I said out loud, it's not supposed to happen like this. You know, this wasn't supposed to happen. And I was joking, but that was, you know, there's a feeling of that as well, you know, like, oh, geez, he's actually really leaving. But we also have a real understanding that there's a gift in that, a gift in Lumpur leaving. And we're always needing to prepare for the parting of those that we rely on, those who we think are just going to be around. And I imagine for couples who've been together many years, this is just taken for granted that they'll both be around for each other, and we find that, well, either health might cause that problem, you know, might cause a problem with that belief or assumption, or just kind of getting tired of each other and just saying, all right, I've had enough. So there's not a lot of necessarily counting on the, you know, this human realm in terms of what we think we can count on. And it's quite beneficial to have this reflection that we can bring into our hearts over and over again. So it just prepares us for everything. It's like, we might just not like what's for breakfast. And it's like, well, all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, become separated from me. Or just somebody says something that they're ornery and they say something to us that is hurtful. And again, it's that same thing. It's like, why do I think that this person's going to always be nice? People have bad days. And so we always have opportunities to kind of really work with this, and it's actually very beneficial that Lumpur has left, you know, if we think about it. We get to practice mudita for him being in England and Amaravati, and he hasn't spent a long time in Amaravati. This is surely a rare opportunity for all of the monks that live there. They tend to have about 30 monks, and one of them is Lumpur Samedo. And I think Lumpur Possum was reflecting, it was like 1976, the last time they lived together. So that's a long time. And so I definitely rejoice in his being able to live with Lumpur Samedo, and then all of the monks that get to have time with him. And that's very rare, because my sense is that those group of monks have had very little exposure to Lumpur Possum. So yeah, there's a way to kind of shift the mind in a way and kind of feel like, oh yeah, that's a very helpful thing. I'm very happy for Lumpur. I'm happy for those people who get to be around him. But as I was talking about with standing on our own 2 feet, it's, you know, I think this is a very good time. I think it can be incredibly beneficial for Ajñāniko, who for the most part, I think, has had Lumpura or Ajahn Khruna Dhammo, not to mention Ajahn Khruna Dhammo is also gone, so not to forget that as well. So another moment of all that is mine, beloved and pleasing will become otherwise. But now it's a good opportunity for Ajñāniko as the abbot to, you know, really stand on his own 2 feet. And so this will be, I think the first time that he will be the most senior monk in the monastery. And so we can, I think it's really helpful in terms of our Dhamma practice to kind of shift sometimes in terms of seeing sometimes disappointment into opportunity and things that we really can boost our practice with. Because it's sort of like, well, how are we going to carry ourselves when elder monks pass away? And we always will have the Buddha's teachings, so that's very helpful for us. And I also think that it's very important to reflect on the Buddha's teachings. And I know some people don't resonate so much with the suttas, but it's important to try to figure out how one can understand the Dhamma through the suttas as well, not just our teachers who are living, not just through our teachers who are living. So this is just a reflection around that potential for seeing within ourselves, you know, how we can step up, how we can step up in our own practice, and also just remember, you know, when in the case of actual death, when elders die, then their memory often is something that their students will bring up, you know, things that have been said in the past, things that have been important. And so one of the things that Lumpur would, I don't hear him say it too much, but people would ask him lots of questions, and he would often say, like, use your own wisdom. And it was a real challenge to people to say, like, what? I don't have any wisdom, you know, what do you mean? Like, no, you have some wisdom. I mean, if you're interested in Buddhist practice, you have some sense of what the Buddha's teachings are, you know, the Four Noble Truths, that there is suffering. And, you know, the Buddha talks about just that first noble truth. That's not an easy thing to comprehend. And he talks about these Four Noble Truths over and over again, how we're really putting our mind to them, really trying to understand them. And just this teaching that there is suffering, it's not a small thing to really penetrate that, to have a very deep insight into that. And so we're always having these opportunities to train ourselves. And in a way, that's what a teacher is for. Our teachers are training us to train ourselves. They're training us to really know what is the right path for ourselves. And eventually we want to take the training wheels off. You know, we want to explore our practice and not necessarily have to rely on a teacher being there all the time, because there's times like now that won't be possible. And just thinking about what that means, it's really kind of like, well, what are those questions that come up for everyone? You know, what are those things that come to mind? Things like, oh, what do I want to ask? And just asking yourself, you know, how do you pose that question to yourself and really try to understand what is the way through your own wisdom to engage in a more wholesome way, or to deal with a problem in a wholesome way. And often it's through experimentation. And one of the things that we wake up to when we don't have an opportunity to necessarily have an elder like Lumpur Pasno around is, we can talk to our Kalyana Mita, we can get some ideas. Sometimes we get some bad ideas, but For the most part, when we really try out an understanding, with a real eager understanding of seeing through our own wisdom, we do have the potential to make a little bit of effort towards trying to see, like, well, what is the right pathway in the particular problem I'm having? And what that's also doing is it's reinforcing an interest that we have, a curiosity we have around what's going on, rather than a little bit of the dark side that occurs when we rely on a teacher, which can be we are wanting them to answer the question for us. So we're not really interested in answering the question ourselves. We just say, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. And that's the dark side of it's small, although it can be large, but it's small when we overly rely on a teacher, because we don't have that necessary interest and curiosity, or the more important drive or intention towards attempting to understand that, which is very difficult to understand in our practice. And that's because things are complicated and they're not easy, to understand our mind. And we can often fool ourselves in so many ways. One of the things that I remember when I was very junior, I was I'd gone through Anagarika, and I think Samanera, I was in Samanera when this happened. I think I was a first year bhikkhu, I was a Storrs monk. And I was just doing my duty, and I was kind of, with this job. And so I was like, okay, well, my duty is to figure out, like, that we store stuff away and we keep stuff, and there's other stuff that we don't use. And eventually it becomes kind of obvious we don't need some of the things that we use. They just take up space, and so we need to find a better place for them. And so I would go up to Lumpur and Ajahnamara at the time. They were co-abbots. And I would ask them, like, oh, can I... The first thing I found Lumpur's teaching around this was... I'm bringing this up more as, like, I couldn't see that there was anything wrong here. I didn't see anything wrong. I said, can I get rid of this? And he would say, don't ask me that question, or don't ask the question like that. That's not a very beautiful way to talk about a requisite that's been offered by the lay people. What do you mean? I mean, I just want to get rid of it. And he said, well, no, it's the whole idea of getting rid of it. That's aversion, right? There's some, like, you want to get rid of something. You don't like it. You don't want it. It's causing you some imposition. So how about find a good home for this thing? Can I find a good place or a home for it? So it was just that kind of, I had no idea. And that's part of the problem, I guess, I would bring up, is that sometimes we really don't see what it is that we're doing. We just don't see. We can talk to people or talk to ourselves or whatever it might be, and we don't see anything wrong with it. And just those teachings are there, and it really encouraged me to, and there are many examples of that, to really kind of work on, like, what is appropriate speech? What is it right to say and not right to say? And what's the more beautiful way to say something? I think Lumpur was trying to teach me probably just say a little bit less. But and another thing that came up, I remember with this was during a winter retreat, I thought, I have a captive audience. So Ajahn Lumpur Pasno and Ajahnamara would sit in the Dhamma hall after eating, and they'd be sitting there after their bowls were taken away. And so I'd come up with some object. I was like, I want to get rid of this. And so I'd go up and I'd say, hey, can I move this on? And it happened a little while. I think I was doing it every day, and I just wasn't seeing, like, if I was in the position I'm in now, or, a little bit more senior or whatever, I would be pretty annoyed by that. What is this? Why does he just have to come up every day and ask a question? So Lumpur, after a week, I think he just said, go away. I was totally shocked. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what? And that, you know, a lot of the junior monastics who train here, they didn't get to experience Lumpur as the abbot. He had a fierce side to him, and he didn't necessarily sugarcoat things. So I got the fiery end of that, being a bit compulsive and impulsive. But it was a healthy lesson, because it was like, why did he have that reaction? Like, what? And I had to think about that, like, and now it's obvious to me. But at the time, I of course, then I wasn't stupid enough to go up to him again and ask. But I had to kind of curtail it and think, like, okay, maybe the winter retreat's not a good time, but also, like, every day, you know, you're going to go up to them and ask them something because I just want to get rid of it. And so this was, you know, these are these helpful examples. And so there are some times where, like, in this situation, I just couldn't see anything wrong. Couldn't see, like, that there was anything kind of wrong with what I was doing. And I probably wasn't reading some sort of, you know, annoyance or something that was being given to me when I was trying to go up to them and ask. And so there are genuine times where we just don't see in our own behavior when we're doing something. And so we do rely on Kalyanamitta. And I was talking about this at tea in a certain way, that our Kalyanamitta, or our senior teachers, or any of our teachers, are like a crutch. You know, a crutch that we have. And sometimes when you hear the word crutch, you're like, oh, that's not a pleasant word, but a crutch is a necessary thing. You use it when you need it. You know, if you break your leg, you need a crutch. But then there's a time when you don't need it. And so it's up to each one of us to see, like, well, when is it appropriate to really use that crutch? And here, even, we just look at the community. The community is a big crutch. You know, it's sort of like we're using that stability and helpfulness of Kalyanamitta, of, you know, having a schedule here that we follow and having a group of people who are all following a similar path. We use that to help ourselves along the way. So it's incredibly useful. And then, but then we have to kind of see sometimes, like, can I stand on my own two feet? You know, can I just put that crutch away and sometimes rely on myself to see if some problem I'm trying to work through is something I can try to figure out on my own using the wisdom I've had through practicing. And that's what this is all about. It's actually teaching us how to teach ourselves. And the Buddha's teachings are fundamentally about that. They're fundamentally about, you know, that is the definition of wisdom. So you have an understanding of what to do. You know, so it's like I'm feeling really annoyed. You know, I told this person three times something, and they still are doing the same thing, and I'm just so annoyed. And so the wisdom is like, all right, is it better for me to just proliferate about how annoyed I am with this? Or is it better to think, like, well, we're all, you know, we all are the, you know, the inheritors of our karma. And, you know, we put out to the world what we can in terms of being helpful, but then others have to, kind of, they have their own karma. And so getting upset about somebody doing something or something that's annoying, it's not really helpful. Or we look at the suffering around it, either our own suffering or the other person's suffering, for not seeing, you know, something that might be causing them a problem. So again, it's always like a way that we can kind of turn things around and understand things. But this comes through our diligent practice with the Dhamma, and we can't really gain wisdom if we're really not. Putting in that effort ourselves. And as all of you know through the teachings, our teachers can't do the practice for us. The Buddha's words can't do the practice for us, just reading them or getting advice. And especially that sort of like slightly dark side around like just putting our sense of like, well, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. Sometimes that's just not appropriate. It is appropriate to use our own wisdom. And so these are just some reflections I wanted to have, just bring up, because I think it's really important, rather than kind of being necessarily concerned about not having this great fount of wisdom, Lumbar Pasno, around. But you know, we can bring that wisdom in that we've had with having Lumbar in our presence. But then we learn to rely on ourselves. We learn to use that wisdom for what it's for. To teach ourselves how to understand the Dhamma. And this is just very practical and important. It's an important element for us to reflect on and bring up and just ask ourselves, like, well, if I, you know, sometimes ask yourself, if I was enlightened, what would I do? You know, I have a problem with somebody else, or I have, you know, I'm annoyed by this particular thing. If I was enlightened, what would I do? How would there be a problem? And sometimes just that question, when I ask myself that question, I just like, oh, just feel so much more relaxed about it. It's like, oh, I wouldn't suffer. I wouldn't care. I wouldn't be so stressed out about it, and I probably wouldn't even have a view. I'd give up control and anxiety around that. And so it's interesting, like, maybe we don't have a perception of even a concept, like, well, what would that be to be enlightened? But I think there can be some sense, if one's been practicing even a short while, you know, like just that sense of like watching one's breath over and over again, and then all of a sudden it occurs where you're not really thinking, you're not torturing yourself anymore, and just present with that breath, and you sense that beautiful experience of non-suffering for a moment. And so we can have an inclination of what that's like, and then we can bring that up for ourselves. We can ask ourselves what our higher self, or perhaps our future self, or if we, you know, if we weren't, if we didn't have these defilements or these hindrances in our way, what would that be like? How would we answer the questions for ourselves? So in bringing this up, just want to encourage everyone in their own practice and their own wisdom, using that understanding, but also not always trusting yourself, because if you're always trusting yourself and you're not enlightened, then you can get in trouble. So there's also appropriate times to kind of question, maybe what I think is so correct in my view or my emotional state, maybe there's something wrong here, and I do need to ask some Kalyanamitta. So I was also just adding up, I think, Ajahn Sudhiro, are you 12 Vasa? So Ajahn Sudhiro is 12 Vasa, Ajahn Gaya is 12 Vasa. I'm 17 now, and Ajahn Yanako, I believe, is 22. And that's 63 Vasa, which is 12 more years more than Lumbar Pasno. So, you know, that's pretty good, doing pretty good here. And then you add up all of the other monks, Thon Rakito and Thon Hemiko and the Anagarikas, and getting into the 70s. So I think that's very good to also reflect. I think all of us have some wisdom that we can help with. And also, you know, during this time, we're all, in a sense, looking after each other and looking after our practice. And so, in a way, we're also engaging in being that communal crutch I was talking about, that helpful way of moving forward, with us having in common this intention towards practice, this intention towards understanding the Buddha's teachings. And so each one of us can encourage each other. And I know for myself, it's helpful sometimes to remember, like, oh yeah, I'm not doing this alone, and also I need to be a good example. And that doesn't have to be felt as a negative pressure at all. It can be felt as something that, again, is a very noble opportunity to take advantage of, to really see. Because if we are good examples for others, then that means we're being good examples for ourselves. So those are just some reflections tonight. And if there's things that have been useful, please bring them up in your practice. These different ideas or reflections, but otherwise anything that hasn't been useful, then just feel free to leave it behind. You're welcome.